One of them wanted to be the security guy. He claimed he was a security guy.
Hey, welcome everybody to another exciting episode of Security Guy Radio in our brand new studio with our little bitty technical difficulties where I can't quite push the buttons, think, and chew gum at the same time, but I'm working through it. So we'll do it eventually. I got a really interesting show today. We're going to talk about human trafficking. We've talked about this before, but the reason today is a little different is I'm talking to Alan Pierce, who's written a book about this called Hidden Truth. Alan's not a cop. Alan's not a human trafficking expert, but he made himself one. This grabbed his attention. This idea of the human trafficking and what was going on so disturbed him, he decided to go out and do his own research and write a book about it. And I think that makes it very, very unique. So I want you to wait till I push the button here and welcome and welcome Alan to our show here on Security Guy Radio. So let me get the button correct here, Mr. Alan. And there, not that graphic. There we go. All right. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. And yourself?
Good. Glad you came on. Now, the book's called Hidden Truth, Alan Pierce. Now, your website is Awareness for Change, awarenessforchange.org. That's where we can find information about the book and human trafficking and all that kind of stuff. So let's get right into this. I'm really interested first in telling me what motivated you to do this. It's very unique that you decided to come on your own and do this research. In other words, you're not in that field. That's not your thing. You're not a psychologist. You're not a cop. You know, what motivated you to do this?
Movies. I know it's odd as that sound, but it started off with me going to rent out what I felt were action movies, and after watching those movies, I was really disturbed by the contents. After a year of looking at different movies where I saw women and kids, children being abused, I really wanted to know more about it. So essentially, I set out on an exploration, and I went to explore the literature on it and still wasn't convinced. And I just continued to read what the scholars were saying about human trafficking, and one thing led to another.
And what it just got to your core, just bothered you that much that you just did it. It's very unusual. You know that, right?
Well, you know, I think it's called conviction, right?
Yeah.
So, look, you know, you see something that is so disturbing that you cannot reconcile it in your mind.
Like this show, sometimes. The show's very disturbing. We can't reconcile.
I wasn't going to say anything about that, but, you know, I grew up in a traditional home, went to private schools all my life, and went to Christian schools. I went to seminary. And, you know, I consider myself an educated man. But the whole world of human trafficking was completely unknown to me. And I wanted to find out what was really going on. You know, I was just super disturbed by the contents of the movies. And I thought, you know, this was Hollywood producing garbage again, and it was really inappropriate for folks to look at it. So I wanted to get to the bottom of it so I could write Hollywood a letter to let them know, hey, this is why you need to stop producing this garbage. It's not true.
So did you think that some of this stuff was just fake? Was that your take on it?
I thought everything was fake. And even the term trafficking, I had never seen that term before. Right. I thought it was a misspelling of words, and I understand trafficking as transportation, moving things, and actually that's what human trafficking is. Human trafficking is movement of goods, and in this case, it's actually movement of person. But that movement does not have to be from state to state, country to country. That movement could be from the bedroom to another bedroom, or, you know, the person just being sold for sex.
All right. So you sit down and start doing the research. Where'd you get your research from? Where'd you get it? Where'd you gather the data from? Because you thought it was fake at first, or how'd you go find the real stuff?
Yes. Now, that is a perfect question. Okay, so when I started to do my research, it was back in 2010. Now, the United States did not realize we had a problem with human trafficking. And what I mean by that is it wasn't until 2010 that the State Department in its tip trafficking person report actually stated that the United States has a serious problem with human trafficking, including sex trafficking.
2010.
It wasn't until 2010. Now, although the...
It had been going on before, but no, to a great degree, but nobody really focused on it. Is that it?
You know, it was one of those things where the FBI, they already had a criminal division that focused on abduction of kids. That was started back in, say, 2003 with the, 1997. But there wasn't a focus on looking at how prevalent human trafficking was in the United States, and particularly trafficking on U.S. citizens. So my focus...
Oh, that's an interesting point, because I think when people listen, they might have thought, oh, there's a mail order bride problem. There's a child stealing adoption from overseas problem. In other words, it's human trafficking of other people other than American citizens. But what you're saying is it's equally a problem in the United States with Americans, which I think most people don't realize.
Actually, that's true. And this is what made my research that much more challenging. And this is also what makes the book I wrote, Human Trafficking, that much more unique, is I focus on human trafficking of American citizens, period.
Okay.
I'm not looking at trafficking of foreign internationals, and I'm looking at human trafficking of folks from other country or in other countries. I'm looking at human trafficking of U.S. citizens, born, bred in the USA, you know, baseball, apple pie, you know, the whole nine yards. This is trafficking, sex trafficking of folks who live right next door to us, folks who they believe in the American dream. They salute the flag. You know, these are our kids, our women, our daughters, U.S. citizens being trafficked right here in the United States. I know it sounds really bizarre and unbelievable, but it's actually happening.
All right. So I want you to use your you can use your notes or whatever you want to use, but I know you have a lot of statistics for me, and I was reading some of these things. And I was just kind of, my mind was boggled by the whole thing, because one of the things is one out of every 33, I think, kids between like 11 and 14 or 13 is kind of one of the number one targets. And when we say human trafficking, they're stolen, they're taken, they're put into sexual slavery, they're put into child molestation and trafficking are two different things, right?
Yes.
Right. And so we should really distinguish that. Because you can be kidnapped or stolen by somebody in a van, and that's not necessarily a pedophile. That's a different person to look for. That might be some gang member that got paid to pick you up and steal you for money, right?
Yes.
Okay. So give me an idea of you know, some of the things that go on as far as number of people and volume and that kind of stuff.
Okay. So to go back to your earlier question, how did I get the information? A lot of the information early on came from just reading news articles. Because the government, the U.S. government, was behind the ball in terms of identifying, it's actually called domestic minor sex trafficking.
Oh.
It's a technical phrase by the FBI.
Yeah.
Because we were, the U.S. government was behind the ball in really understanding how prevalent domestic trafficking of minors were in the country, I had to dig really, really deep. So I started off with a lot of news articles. Those news articles, they started to lead me to an understanding of looking at more statistical information. And a lot of the statistical information, it was just that, hardcore facts, hard numbers. And that's one of the things that I did not want my book to be, a book about just numbers. Now, it's
fair enough. That's
fair. As you mentioned, I do put numbers in there, lots of numbers. There's over 200 references in there. But those numbers, they tell a story. Now, a number that you would hear a lot is the average age is between, say, 11 and 12. So the average age range is between, say, 11 and 19 years old.
Okay.
Okay, the number 1 out of 33, so that number is based on, if you look at the estimated number of victims per year, which is 100,000 to 300,000 victims per year, what that breaks down to be is about 1 out of every 33 K-12 grader is a potential target for being human trafficked.
That seems like a pretty high percentage. That's not 1 in 100,000 or something. That's 1 out of 33. That's amazing.
That is pretty high. Keep in mind that is only an estimate. So what that means is this: when you start to look at the cumulative effect over years, we have millions of kids, women, children that are at risk of being sex trafficked. And I work in the public school system, so I'm going to kind of break this down a little bit. Now, I think we all have seen that great movie, Taken.
Oh, yeah, I like that movie, yeah.
Really cool movie, you know. Most human trafficking in the United States doesn't happen that way. So the majority of it isn't done by abduction. You know, a person doesn't just pull up in a van and
oh, it doesn't. That's
capture.
Interesting. I would have thought that.
Now, there are cases like that.
Right.
And those are different kinds of traffickers, as I explained in the book. That would be more like a guerrilla type of trafficker where they use brutal force to get the girl.
Right.
In. But a lot of it is done through seducing the girl. And this is what makes the crime go unknown, because the young lady is seduced. Say, let's take an example of what we call a CEO trafficker. A CEO trafficker, it stands for just that. It's someone who comes along, they're dressed very nice, they have a tons of money in their pockets, and they have a nice car, and they have a business card. And they make business deals. So say you have a young lady who's interested in being a model or interested in going to Hollywood. She meets this person. This person tells her a lot of great things that he can do for her. He may actually have a legitimate agency, and he slowly brings her in. And it may start out with, taking pictures. And then it transitioned to taking pictures in swimwear, and then it transitioned to partial nudity, and then it goes from there to the guy saying, hey, listen, I have some clients who they want to spend a little bit of free time with you, pardon me, a little bit of extra time with you, and, you know, this would be great for your career. Now, it seems at that point, the young lady would go, hey, no, I'm not going to do this.
Well, if she's 18, right? Or an adult, or she's on her own or something like that, then she can make her decision. But it's not that easy.
It's not that easy. So what these guys would do at that point, if the young lady doesn't want to comply, they have ways to get her to comply. Right. So this is the force part. So, it could be something as well. You know, I do know where your parents live, and I know you have a family. I know your brothers and sisters. I can make something happen to them. If that type of threat doesn't work, then it could be more physical, where he can start beating her or he can have her raped. And the rape doesn't just happen and it's over with. It's actually recorded. He can lace her drink, and that's usually what happens. So when they are recording the rape, it doesn't look like a rape.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Right.
Being done with multiple guys. So now this is recorded, and the guy comes back and tells her, hey, listen, I have this on video. If you don't go and spend time with my clients, I'm going to let everybody know about this. I'm going to spread this everywhere. And, you know, he may, you know, say, hey, listen, this is only going to be, you know, only one time. You got to spend some time with this person. Everything will be good. Well, one time leads to a second time, a third time, and the process continues to go on. Now, the young lady she's terrified. She understands that if she doesn't comply, then this guy's going to just ruin her life by showing these videos of her doing despicable sex acts with men that they just had their way with her.
Now, why isn't this less human trafficking? I never thought about it this way. I would think of that as more of a crime against person, individual crime, extortion, blackmail, rape, a bunch of things. But you're saying that this sort of scenario is a systematic type of scenario in one industry or one way to do it. That's what you're saying.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. So they might have 500 of these girls that do this or whatever it is. I mean, whatever the ring is, it's just a matter of this isn't a remote situation. And by the way, is it possible we could see some of these people as models or in public and this is happening to them? We don't know it. Is that possible?
Well, of course it's possible. And, you know, in terms of the average trafficker, they have between, say, 4 to 6 girls. When we start getting up in higher numbers, it becomes far more organized,
right.
You know, more mafia type, very, very structured. But, you know, the typical trafficker would have, say, 4 to 5, 6 girls, and that person can make, depending on what state that person's in, they can make between $150,000 to $200,000 per girl. Okay, now let's go back a little bit. Let's also look at the default frame, because this is really important. So a lot of us have the image of a trafficked girl as someone who's on drugs, a minority, a runaway, a latchkey kid, a dropout. We hear a lot about, you know, girls who've been in a foster home.
Right.
So a lot of
that's movie stuff, kind of, right?
Movie stuff.
Yeah.
But in reality, even though that is part of the population that are a target, but in reality, we have girls from very good homes, girls from stable families. And actually, all the cases that I've worked on, all the girls have been from good Christian homes. Some of them were even homeschooled. They had both parents at home. So they didn't meet any of the stereotypes, the default frame. Now, these girls were not taken from their homes. They continue to go home. They continue to go to school. This one case I was working, the young lady, when she went home and told her parents that a friend was pimping her out, trafficking her out, the parents said no.
Didn't believe it.
You know, it's something that they never heard of, and their understanding of trafficking is, you know, the girl is taken.
She disappears. That's the
idea. She disappears. She's put on drugs, and that's the end of the story. But you see, that is the misconception. The reality is, now, I'm an educator, and I work in the public schools. I have students who these are eighth graders. They come to school at times and they are totally dressed inappropriately. And I speak to them about it and they say, oh, you know, my mom knows about it. It's like, oh, you're breaking the dress code. So what I do is I call home and I talk with the mom. And the mom is completely shocked.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes. So what I've come to find out is that even though these kids, these victims, they live at home, But once they have dropped off at school, usually the parent leaves. You know, it's a school,
right.
You know, you got to drop your kid off and then it's other kids. And when the parents leave, the girls, they go someplace else and they do other activities and then they come to school later. You know, when I've explained to parents, you know, the number of tardies that their daughter has had, the number of absentees the daughter's had, the parents are completely shocked. So it is reasonable to understand that this goes on even when the kid is still living at home.
So it's a hide in plain sight.
That's what it is.
Interesting.
That's what it is.
I'm fairly educated in this stuff. I'm no expert, but I know more than the average bear, right? And I absolutely would have thought that to have human trafficking, the person had to disappear, be kidnapped, taken prisoner, held against their will and stuff. But not according to the hidden truth. There's one of the hidden truths right there. Very interesting. Very interesting.
Right. You know.
And by the way, the people that are taking these people or engaging them are other Americans. It's not some foreign conspiracy of an organized crime family, right?
That's right. They're not from the Russian mafia.
Right. Well, that does happen, though. I mean, that stuff does go on. But what you're saying here is that's not the case here, though. But
well, you know, you raise an interesting question. And the question is, what is a trafficker? You know, do we have a profile of traffickers? And the answer is no.
Oh.
We don't have a profile of a trafficker. Essentially, a trafficker is anyone who would use force, fraud, or coercion to get someone to do what they want them to do. Now, although I focus on sex trafficking of females, there are trafficking of males also. But the numbers are extremely low. The majority of cases are girls. Girls as young as 11. There are babies. Now, I don't go into a lot of details in the book because I don't, you know, it's not digestible when you start talking about kids. But let me give you an example.
Now, we're not talking about stealing kids for adoption. That happens.
Yes.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about something completely different.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes. Completely different.
No editing here on Security Guy Radio, so go ahead.
Completely different. So, you know, I was doing some investigation, and I got to a point in my investigation. This is actually when I was doing research in journals and books and stuff like that. And, you know, I came across literature that started to talk about infants, babies being used in human trafficking. And, you know, once again, you know, I'm person who's trying to find the truth, and yeah, I completely dismiss that. I say, okay, it's impossible. It can't happen. You know, not a baby. What could they do to a baby? I get a phone call from an officer who was working with me. He was providing me information on cases, and he told me they had just conducted a raid. They found a baby. On the back of the baby's head was ball, and I wasn't really putting two and two together. And then he finally spelled it out. And his baby was being used in sex trafficking. And my question was, okay, how could you use a baby?
Well, I had plenty of rape cases of children, infants. It's disgusting. And I unfortunately still have pictures in my head about some weird stuff I've seen like that. So that does happen. So I'm not surprised by that, right? But I don't know. I am being surprised by the degree that this is going on. I always think of kids getting stolen, babies, to be put up for adoption, which I'm going to do a show on in a couple weeks, by the way. That happens, right? Because some couple can't afford a kid, and they can't get an adoption through the regular way, and they pay somebody for it and that kind of thing. But this is something completely different.
This is completely different. This is actually...
Are the cops misclassifying this as, you know, a child kidnapping as opposed to a, you know...
Trafficking case?
Trafficking case, yeah. I guess it'd be easy to miss that. Unless you find the kid, you don't know.
Right. Well, this one was pretty explicit. You know, the place they raided, it was actually where girls were being held and they were being forced to sell their bodies for money to clients or johns for sex. And this baby was being used for oral copulation.
Oh my God. I just dropped my mouse here when you were saying that. Good heavens. That's unbelievable.
It's
you talk about, when you say baby, you mean like a 2-year-old, 3-year-old, that kind of thing?
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Still in Pampers.
Unbelievable. And when they did the forensic on that case and went back and found out, how long had that child been missing? Do you know how long had it been stolen? Or I suppose sometimes,
you know,
horrifically,
I,
some
I
parents.
Wasn't privy to the rest of that information. Sometimes in cases with babies that small, you have traffickers who they see trafficking as a very extensive enterprise, and they will actually impregnate some of these females, and the baby comes out to be the property of the trafficker.
Well, I've heard of that. Yeah, I've heard of that. I'm wondering in some of these cases if there's any information on, you know, parents selling their kids into these things willingly, right? I mean, I've heard that. I have had cases like that where they sell their children.
You know, so that's getting back to the default frame. And that's something that I want to get us away from. Because as long as we can put the blame on, and I know that's not what you're doing,
right,
but as long as we can believe that, you know, this only happens because a parent voluntarily put their kids at risk, we're not going to really stop it.
Okay,
and
that's a fair
other
point.
Kids are going to be at risk also. What we need to really focus on is that it is human trafficking is the second fastest growing criminal enterprise in the world.
What's the first one?
Gun smuggling.
Really?
Yes.
No, I thought so. Drugs are dropping out of the number one. That's good. That's good. What cheery news? It's guns first, and then kids and drugs are off. But.
Well, you know what has happened is this, because of the war on drugs, and because of the budget of that war, you know, $30, $40, $50 billion. The drug enforcement agency at the state, local, and federal level, they have the drug problem pretty much under control.
Okay.
You know, you got dogs who can sniff things out. You have X-ray machines that can see through things. So the drug thing is pretty much under control.
Better than we used to be.
Far better than what it used to be. So what gangs started to realize is that, listen, there is a war on drugs, and we can't defeat law enforcement because they do have the resources to fight it. But there isn't a war on human trafficking.
No, there's not. It's
and
it's
virtually
unknown.
It's far easier to traffic a victim than to sell drugs. So think about this. The rescue rate for victims is 1 out of 100. That's 1 out of 100. The rescue rate.
So 1 out of 33 can be taken, but only 1 out of 100 get rescued. It's not good odds.
Only one. Well, you know, I was looking at some numbers. So each year the FBI does what is called Operation Cross Country. And they've been doing this ever since 2003. From 2003 up to 2016, they've rescued about, say, 5,000 victims.
Okay.
Now, let's put that in context of numbers. We have between 100 to 300,000 per year. And over a span of over 10 years, only about 5,000 have been rescued.
That's not good. In the United States alone.
This is only domestic trafficking.
Oh, my God. 100,000 to 300,000 a year go into sexual slavery and,
yes,
or human trafficking. And,
yes.
And,
yes.
And regular. I mean, that includes also, by the way, human slavery. Maybe it's not sex. Maybe you're just a servant. That happens too, right?
So you do have different categories of human trafficking, right? Okay. You have labor trafficking. You have gun smuggling. You have drug smuggling. most of the over half of the cases that are reported here in the United States deal with some type of sex trafficking. And of that half, about 80% of the victims are identified as U.S. citizens.
80%?
80% of the victims are identified as U.S. citizens.
I want, let me check this paper here. Because you're turning my head upside down. So we're talking about 80% of all the traffic, human trafficking in the United States turns out to be Americans, not the foreigners from a movie you see where they got sent over here as a mail order bride or they got shipped over here in a crate and they're down at the port. These are just regular people going about their business in America and they're the victims. That's pretty shocking. I've never heard that before.
You know, the thing that have changed the playing field is social media. You know, before social media, trafficking was a little bit more difficult because of the layers of the network. All right, so to do trafficking historically, traditionally, you had to have a recruiter. You know, the person that actually went and found the girls. You had a connector, you know. Connector could be anyone in the community, someone who just, you know, connects someone with someone else. And then you have the recruiter who the connector connects this young lady with the recruiter, right? And then you have to have the groomer. You know, you got to teach the person the culture. You have to teach them how to prostitute themselves.
Right.
You have to train them. You have to brainwash them.
And this is all old school stuff you're talking about. That's how it used to be done.
This is how it used to be done. So there was
and that was
this,
the movie
this
version.
Network.
That's a movie version, by the way.
That's
kind
the,
of.
The movie
know.
Version.
Yeah, okay.
Right. But and that still occurs.
Sure.
Particularly recruiters, because recruiters are very vital to human trafficking, because customers, they want fresh meat, fresh girls. So recruiters are always out there trying to find new girls.
Now, it's interesting you call them recruiters, because I would have called them kidnappers. Well, but this is your perception, and that does happen. But again, your book is suggesting a hidden truth, a great title, that there's more subtle things going on here. This isn't like open a van door, pull you inside, and you're never going to see you again. You're being seduced into this world, and sometimes it's in plain sight among your friends and family, and they don't even know.
Yes. So, you know, there is one story I would like to read that really illustrates this. At the time I got involved in the case, Mary was already being sold on an adult entertainment website, Backstage.com. Only her mother looked at their daughter's pictures on the adult website. It was too much for the father to bear, pictures of his daughter being advertised. Her parents' political connections meant nothing when they went to the police for help. From the police perspective, Mary was not a victim, but a willful participant. There was no proof that Mary was a traffic victim. Often this happens because traffickers build relationships with victims that make it appear as if the victim had willfully chosen this work. Now,
that is an excellent point, because they do build this relationship where they appear to, you know, be a friend, business connection, whatever it is. And I guess you have to behave that way or they'll kill you. That's why it works, right? I mean, that's basically it.
You know, because the relationships are built, it makes it that much harder for law enforcement to actually build a case. And because these victims, they don't self-identify, when law enforcement do get a distress call from a victim, they go to the scene, but the victim doesn't self-identify, meaning the victim doesn't say, hey, listen, I'm being sex trafficked.
Well, can't we just use common sense if it appears to be a child? Even if they're, you know, 18 years and 1 month, I'm going to say, you know what, you look 14 to me. You know, you have authority to do things like that. You have authority to make mistakes as a police officer in somebody's benefit. I'm talking about lying or making up stuff. But listen, if you don't know how old that person is, I'm siding with your child. You're coming with me. Go ahead and sue me as a policeman for making a mistake like that, right? Do you think law enforcement isn't seeing it. They must be seeing these things. There must be laws that you can use. And I know as a cop, I could take a lot of action if I thought a child was involved. This is a very interesting point in your book, this subtlety of identifying what the crime is, right?
Yes.
And so you're suggesting that we're not identifying this as a crime, that we're identifying this as a really bad relationship. You're an idiot. I can't legislate morality. If you want to choose to go out and hang with a guy like that, that's your business. And you know what? If they think it's misdemeanor prostitution, they don't really care about that as much. They have more important things. Well, I take that back. Not more important things. They have different priorities, right? And by the way, in California, I'm sure you're aware that unless you really, you know, do something super serious, you're not spending any time in jail. Misdemeanors, forget it. Most felonies are being lowered for sentencing, and guys are getting released early. So this does not help California. And we were talking before the show that I think you said California is one of the number one states. Isn't Los Angeles one of the capitals of the world in this stuff?
So in California, we have Los Angeles, San Francisco, and San Diego. And those are three of the core locations for a lot of sex trafficking. But, you know, to get back to law enforcement, I mean, to be fair to them, they really are trying to do their best. So
no, I know that. And there was just a giant raid and arrest of about 500 of these idiots about 2 months ago. Did you see that? L.A.
Yes.
County big task force. That was a statewide operation. But if what you're telling me is 100,000 or 300,000 victims a year and only 5,000 have been recovered since 2008, we got to do better.
Since 2003.
Three.
So,
yeah.
So look, let's look at some numbers here.
Yeah,
so in 2014, the FBI did their Operation Cross Country. They rescued 149 victims.
And this was a nationwide effort.
Nationwide.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, let's put that in perspective. So the National Human Trafficking Hotline that year received 5,526 human trafficking calls.
Tips or maybe a victim's calling the line.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
So now if we just look at that number, not the 300,000, that's a rescue rate of 2.7% for 2015. Okay, that's just looking at the national hotline trafficking numbers. If we look at 2016, Operation Cross Country rescued 82 victims. And 2016, the National Human Trafficking Hotline received 7,572 calls of potential human trafficking cases. So that's a 1% rescue rate. Now, what has happened is the National Human Trafficking Hotline Center, there has been a 35.7% increase in the number of calls they're receiving from 2015 up to 2016.
35% in 1 year.
Yes.
Wow. Well, there's been a lot of awareness campaigns. People are kind of talking about it more, right? It's one of those things that I think part of the problem is people don't want to talk about it. Nobody wants to talk about an infant and sexual molestation. I didn't want to arrest people for it. I didn't want to see it, but that was my job, right? It's very difficult.
You know, if most people are like me, it's too devastating for the mind to conceive.
Right. We don't think those things happen. It makes me angry, right? So I arrested some child molesters when I was a young policeman. And I had to keep my temper about me for it, right? Because I just felt if I had a chance, legally, morally, to bust a cap in that guy's ass, I would have done it during an arrest, right? Oh, you're raping somebody. Perfect. Thanks. Let me kill you and stop all the trial and all that nonsense, right? But I'm good to see there's an increase in awareness. That indicates that if the numbers are going up on the notifications and stuff, then people are saying, you know what, that looks like that might be something I need to report now. Or report people weren't reporting it, right?
So it's like a two-edged sword, right? On one hand, it's actually very good because people are becoming aware of potential human trafficking cases. I guess on the other hand, it shows that there's an increase in people being victimized.
Right.
Now,
hey, look at your paper here.
Oh, yes.
I like all these things you have on this piece of paper here. California, Texas, Florida, Ohio, and New York.
Those are the big five.
The big five states where everything happens.
Yes.
Okay.
California is number one. And when you look in terms of gang activity, I mean, Chicago is number one. California is number two in terms of gangs. But California has over, 450 different types of gangs, over 400,000 gang members.
Right. It's an army.
And gang members, they have started to really make sex trafficking into a very lucrative enterprise. So they're actually collaborating with each other. They're crossing gang territory only for the purpose of doing business.
It's business, right. Interesting.
Yes, yes. Now, that's very scary also when you consider 20% of the new recruits for sex trafficking victims are, you know, from gangs.
Right.
So the gangs, they understand the rescue rate is 1 out of 100, and the conviction rate is 1 out of every 8,000. And the reason the conviction rate is so low is the DA cannot get the victim to give credible evidence against the traffickers. So what usually happens
is... Define credible. What do you mean? It's his word against her word? Is that the problem?
Or? Essentially, that is what goes on, because you gotta keep in mind, say, for example, this is what I call in the book a Romeo trafficker. So this person establishes a relationship with the female. They go on dates. He meets her family. He knows everything about her. But now, once he isolates her, he tells her, hey, listen, put on these clothes. I want you to do something. And once again, either she can comply or she could be broken in through force. Also, the young lady is very afraid because she knows that this guy knows where her family lives, knows everything about her sisters, her brothers, and he makes a threat. But listen, if you don't do it, my buddies, they're going to take care of your family. Now, if this is a gang member, can you imagine a young lady, 15, 16, 21, 25, and there's guys, they're tattooed up, they have guns. She knows, hey, they do have the power to carry out this threat. So she goes and does what this guy tells her to do. Now, how can she convince, or what type of credible evidence does she have where the judge would say, yes, this is a case? No, it's really her word against his word. They have pictures of them together. They've been on Facebook together. They've gone on trips together. So she really doesn't have any credibility.
Well, here's why I think I would try to fix that. We can get them arrested on probable cause. I can arrest a cheese sandwich in Los Angeles on probable cause. Okay, if you know what you're doing, it's a great law. And a lot of states may not have probable cause, but we do in California. Wouldn't it work if I was a police officer and I came in and you told me, hey, Officer Chuck, I'm being trafficked. I need you to help me out. I'm going to take your word for it, face value. I'm going to assume it's true. I'm going to act on that belief. I can make some arrests. I can take you out of there into protective custody. Not like the movies where you put you in a safe house. I'm just saying I can say, okay, you're leaving. Come with me to the police station. We're going to file a report. And then I can pass you into other things like you know, safe houses for domestic violence, because really, it's kind of domestic violence. Why aren't we doing that?
You're talking about resources.
The
officer will do that. The officer, if someone self-identifies, the officer will remove her.
Right.
But you got to keep in mind,
I don't care about the courts, because if I'm out of there, I'm not going to court to face you. I'm disappearing. If I was lucky enough to get away from you, I'm going to go hide. I'm going to let my family know I'm okay, and I'm going to disappear until everything's safe. I mean, I know that sounds crazy because there's a lot of psychology involved here and things, but there are ways we could at least stop. To me, it's like the domestic violence clock, right? The cycle. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Everybody's a honeymoon at noon, and then 2 o'clock you start arguing, 6 o'clock there's a fight, and by 12:45 you're going to kill each other. And if the cops don't come, eventually you're going to get killed, right? So intervention, I think, could do a lot to this. What do you think about that?
Well,
we're not going to win the case, but we're going to stop that incident right now.
Okay, it sounds great. And
it does, doesn't it? Sometimes that's a good idea.
So let's actually play that out. Let's say the young lady, she does leave. Now, the trafficker still has her family information, and he still has some way to get in contact with her.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that part.
So, you know, the in terms of police protection, there is no police protection because no case has been established.
Well, so that's true.
Law enforcement cannot just use resources that they don't have to protect a person that says they're a victim of sex trafficking. So that's
you got me on that one.
That's a huge problem. Yeah. And in terms of finding a location for the young lady, there aren't that many places for victims of human trafficking to go. Certain organizations would not take a young lady who's gone through human trafficking for a number of reasons. One, because of the traumatic experience she has gone through.
Right.
The other one is they don't have the resources to counsel her. Another one is sometimes traffickers will actually send, say someone,
it's
called the bottom B-I-T-C-H, which is a oxymoron because the bottom B is actually the trafficker's secondhand person. And he would send that person into like a rescue center to find someone that he's looking for or to recruit other females.
Right. Well, you got me on that. That's a very good point. So let's talk about some numbers. You're looking at budgets here, and I'm going to let you tell us about the budgets. You know, what's allocated for human trafficking as opposed to drug and terrorism. That's very interesting stuff. So,
once again, our law enforcement, they are doing
what they can.
The best, exactly, right, with the budget they have. The FBI, they're doing the best they can with the budget that they have. So, you know, I was looking at some numbers here for 2016. 2016, the war on terrorism is around $85.9 billion.
Okay,
the war on drugs for 2016 is about $30 billion. The budget from the Department of Justice on fighting human trafficking, $13 million for foreign national victims.
Well, hold on a second.
$5.8 million for domestic victims.
Hold on. Let me see. Let me see if you're reading that properly. All right. We got four national victims get $13 million, but U.S. citizens only get $5.8 million? That's insane.
This has always been the case. Okay, so
why?
When the Trafficking Victim Protection Act, we think
they're all Russians or something, right?
That's right. Oh. Because historically, we believe that a lot of the trafficking was exactly what you said.
Yeah.
You know, someone got a foreign bride. And they brought her here and they're sex trafficking her, or some internationals, they came over on the boat and now they're being sex trafficked. So, you know, because that was the prevailing assumption, obviously all the resources went towards that. That is still the case where most of the resources, and now once again, let's also keep this in perspective. When we're talking about fighting human trafficking, we're talking about in the two-digit millions. When we're talking about fighting, say, war on terrorism, we're talking up into the hundreds of billions, all right? And rightfully so, we do need to fight the war on terrorism. But what I will argue is this, considering that one out of every 33 kids are at risk of being sex trafficked, considering that human trafficking has been reported in all 50 states, this is a war of terrorism on women and kids. Now, the human trafficking industry worldwide takes in over $30.1 billion.
Worldwide, right. Okay.
Worldwide.
What are we doing in the U.S. here? Any numbers on that?
We don't have exact numbers for the U.S., but we can speculate. You know, if, say, a trafficker takes in, you know, 150,000 to 200,000, they have about 4 to 5 girls. So, you know, one trafficker takes in, you know, half a million to a million per year.
Oh, wait a minute. One girl makes 150 to 200,000 a year.
Depending on the geographical location.
And the trafficker might have 5 of those girls. So we're talking about $1 million.
About $1 million.
And we got 300,000, 100,000 or 300,000 people that are victims. Yeah, you do the math. It's a lot of money.
It's in the billions.
Billions, yeah.
But once again, you know, we don't know the exact numbers. We just know we have over 100,000 girls per year. We know we have a profile that these traffickers are looking for are young girls. We also know, in terms of going back to the default frame, girls that are white, blonde, they have more value than, say, minority girls, black girls, Asian girls, Hispanic girls. So
this is completely the opposite, I think, of what people think.
Oh, it's totally the opposite.
Right? It is.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, very interesting.
It is. So, you know, getting back to the budget thing with the war on drugs and the war on terrorism, there needs to be a war against human trafficking. Once the United States starts to put serious dollars in fighting human trafficking, then I believe we would start to see a drop in the number of cases and a number of victims. And we would see more prevention. Prevention is far better. You know, when...
Well, let's talk about that. What would you... You've given us some clues as to what to look for and all this kind of thing, but prevention's always the best on anything. Education.
Yes.
And you're an educator, right?
Yes.
I mean, one thing I don't get about some schools and some parents and systems is, you know, it used to be back in the day, your teacher gives you a note, you bring it home to mom and dad, and it says, you're going to go to a sex education class.
That was back in the day.
And it's Thursday night in the gym. And you went there with your dad, and they played a bunch of slides, and you said, okay, somebody raises their hands, but how does the sperm get into the egg? I don't get it. Okay, discussion's over. Go talk to your dad now, right? And this was all normal stuff, right? A little awkward, but now it's like, oh, no, you can't have my kid in one of those classes. I'm not going to allow it. And everybody has their own lawyers for everything, and nobody wants to talk about things, and everybody's really not in the collective anymore. People aren't a community and a group in a neighborhood like we used to be. And, you know, you wouldn't think twice about doing the things we did when we were kids that we did in school that now school says, oh, no. You know, there needs to be human trafficking classes in school starting in grade school. Would you agree or disagree?
I would totally agree.
It's not going to happen, though, is it? Not in L.A. County schools, although I didn't say you work there, so don't send me any letters, right? But you know what I'm saying? I mean, you know the system. It's just not going to happen. That's going to scare parents. But that's where we need to start. We need to start educating the victim, potential victim, right?
Yes.
And then let's get the cops some money. I mean, this is ridiculous. I'm turning even more red than I normally am. This is really making me angry. I'm serious. That's just insane. What would you suggest if we're going to do some kind of education? What grade level would you start, and what might you discuss?
You know, I believe everything starts at home.
Okay, good point.
I believe parents, when they understand that human trafficking happens right here in all 50 states, and it can happen in any neighborhood across all economic, social, political, religious backgrounds, they will have information where they can look at social media, look at who their daughter is chatting with. They will be able to talk with their daughters about, these are some things to look for in relationships. And if this starts to happen, sweetheart, you need to come and let us know immediately. So a lot of it starts at home. If the parents really take to heart that human trafficking, it happens through young women being seduced and not just abducted, taken off the streets, they would really start to understand that, hey, you know what? The only way to stop this is by letting our kids know that there are predators, well, traffickers out there. And even though they seem nice, but they're trying to build a profile. They're right. trying to get information. They're trying to isolate you. And once they isolate you, then they're going to do things to you that's going to make it really hard for you to want to come and tell us.
Now, I know that the way I educated my kids was, it wasn't just the don't talk to strangers things. That's basic. And there was a little bit of self-defense in there or or offense, right? Somebody gets in your face, I got no problem with you hitting A, B, C and taking care of business, right? But I also gave them a sense of, you know, if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. And if you get that hair in the back of your neck standing up, you got to run the other way. And you have to avoid social awkwardness. And I think some of the ways that these guys succeed nowadays is that people are afraid to say no. Nobody likes to say no. I love to say no. It's the most powerful word in the English language. If I say no to you about something you want out of me, you have to stop and you have to change your behavior and you have to try and negotiate and compromise with me or you're not going to get what you want. So instead of, you know, the recruiters, we'll call them, right? Come on, hey, baby, you want to go out to? No. Nope. Can I have your phone number? Nope. Hey, nope. Nope, nope, nope. Now that guy's going to say, you know what? I'm going to go down here to this other victim that's easier, whose brain is softer, and I can get through, right? So we have to start with basic things like that. But you also have to be blunt, right? The word penis and vagina were used in my house very early at the dinner table, much to the chagrin of some family members. But you know what? When you call things what they are, then you're not uncomfortable about talking about it, and you're not uncomfortable dealing with it, and then you're effective. I think one reason some of this stuff happens is because good people that know better don't know what to do. They don't know what to say. They don't know how to respond to it. And so the brain says, oh, you know, my little girl couldn't possibly be involved in that. I saw her on Facebook yesterday putting up a picture of something, you know. And it's really interesting. This is much more seductive than I thought it was.
You know, just to get back, that is a good point. You know, saying no does help. Now, the problem comes in here when you don't have a reference to think that this person could be doing something. So yeah. They would not use...
Everybody wants 15 minutes of fame now.
Exactly.
Seductive.
They're not going to come, you know, with force. They're not going to be so blunt. What these folks are very skillful at, they're skillful at building profiles. So say, for example, they see a picture of a young lady on social media. They find out she likes soccer. Her parents go to church. They're going to send a picture of someone that kind of fits a profile they think she's looking for.
That's interesting. Okay.
They build a relationship. They decide, you know, you've been talking with this person on social media for a couple of months. You know, they know about you. You decide, hey, you know what? Let's meet up at a coffee shop. You guys meet up. You get in a car because you kind of think you trust this person. But things, they go sideways real fast.
Now, you talked about that earlier. I kind of interrupted your train of thought. But the social media is the new in now. This is the
yes.
new way to do it. And it can be a long seduction. You could have somebody on your Facebook page for a year.
Yes.
And it just turns into, hey, that's fun. And hey, how are you? And blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
And then it just flips. And one day, that's it. You know, we're almost out of time. It's amazing. This went by a whole hour. So the name of the book is The Hidden Truth. Now, we can find awarenessforchange.org is your website. We can find
yes.
links to the book and how to buy the book and stuff like that, right?
Yes.
And you have some other really good things in your website, which were, you know, how to get involved in community activities, how to combat this. We had some videos of people. It's a very informative website. I'd like to have you back on the show because I want
to
get into this whole social media seduction thing. I think that's a whole show in itself. Right?
Yes.
I mean, I'm, you know, my mother didn't raise any dumb kids. However, I found this very educational. I mean, I got to say, I think these are some things that I was not aware of. When you think about them, they're common sense, right? But this just tells you how seduced we are by media to believe, even though you don't want to, and how influenced you are by things you see. you see movies, and, you know, movies are a reflection of reality. They're not reality, right? But it's amazing how a stereotype can be built off of social media. Not social media, but, you know, like traditional movies. And on the other hand, we learned this from the last election, right? All the myths and facts about, we don't know what was going on in the last election. We don't know who was up and who was sideways and what happened, because the media had one narrative, pretty much, about what they thought was going on. And you really couldn't find the facts in there. So I think we should do a whole show, and maybe we can study some cases on how people get picked off social media. And by the way, we're talking about young kids, mostly.
Yes.
But are you finding also in your research that this happens with older people? When I say older, I don't know. You know, maybe this is kind of ties into, you know, the dating victims where they get taken for money and ripped off and all that kind of stuff. And
yes,
that kind of stuff, you know. Maybe not human trafficking per se, but it's all kind of related.
No, actually, it does, Chuck. That's a good point. We thought older people were not victims. We were wrong. We started to run across cases where there's a couple of cases in Santa Monica. One, the lady, she was 62 years old. Traffickers,
well,
they see dollar signs.
Well, because there's a taste for everybody. Right?
There you go.
So
there
whatever you go. Your fetish, whatever your thing, then
that's right.
That makes sense. You know,
kids with disabilities,
right.
You know, everyone has a particular taste that they like,
right.
And traffickers will supply.
And we got to make this a cause, man. This is really pissing me off. This is really pissing me off. You guys ought to be ashamed of yourself over there at the Department of whatever you're called to only spend $5.8 million on domestic victims of human trafficking. This is insanity. We got to change this.
Department of Justice, but please do not help them to call me.
No. All right, Alan, we're going to wrap this up. Let me put up your graphic one more time here so we can get a take of your website. All right, so we're going to find you at awarenessforchange.org. The name of the book is Hidden Truth. And we can buy your book off that website and get a hold of you?
Yes.
All right, Alan, thanks for coming on Security Guy.
Thank you for having
TV.
Me.
I appreciate this. And we're gonna pick this up again later because this is really a mind-boggler, I got to say. All right,
thank you.
Thanks for coming on Security Guy Radio. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.